Hey everyone, welcome to Office Hours with Cloud Posse, your weekly dose of insider DevOps trends, AWS news, and Terraform insights, all sourced from our SweetOps community, plus a live Q&A you can't find anywhere else. It is November 6th, 2024. My name is Eric Osterman. I'll be your host today. I'm the founder and CEO of Cloud Posse. I had to remember that for a moment there. We're a DevOps accelerator for infrastructure that helps teams develop and deploy their software faster. And we do this by leveraging our over 200 Terraform modules that have been battle tested and downloaded over 100 million times. So no matter where you find yourself on this journey, and if you're banging your head against the wall with Terraform, just head over to cloudposse.com/meet. Again, cloudposse.com/meet. Answer a few quick questions and you'll book a meeting with me directly. I'll show you what modern infrastructure really looks like. So first off, our format today is really informal. Engage as much as you'd like, ask questions. And if you're curious about any of our open source tools or modules, go for it. For those on the recording, we host these calls live, so don't miss out. Join us by going to cloudposse.com/officehours. Again, cloudposse.com/officehours. We'll be posting a recording of this session to our YouTube channel. So if you found this interesting, please go ahead and share it with your team. It's a great way to get everyone on the same page. All right, let's see what we have in terms of announcements this week. All right, first one is a little nice vanity metric for Cloud Posse. I was really excited to see. We broke 18,000 stars across all of our repositories. That's a, you know, as an open source company, that's a pretty big milestone for us. And I'm, you know, grateful for everyone who has shown their support by clicking the little star button on our repositories. If it doesn't help in any other way, it helps me know that we're on the right track. All right. So the next announcement is a post that was trending on Hacker News. And whoa, what happened there? Did I copy and paste the link wrong? Interesting. I really like this post, so I wanted to share it, and the site looks to be offline. Well, there we go about that. Matt, do you think you can look up, see if you can find this one? There are some really interesting command line tools there that I wasn't aware about. I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, I'll see if they can find them.
Do you need the old link?
Sure, that would be great if you can DM it.
Yeah, maybe it's on maybe it's on archive.is or something. Change the and just that friendly reminder, the annoying Read AI bot changed our the response recipient for all messages in Zoom chat. So there's that link. All right, next one. Yeah, this is another Cloud Posse announcement. So if you're a user of Cloud Posse's Atmos framework and you use a lot of our AWS components, I'm not talking about the Terraform modules, but the AWS components that we have. These are all the ones published in this repository. This is just a public service announcement that we are relocating or rehoming those components into a new GitHub organization. Each component will more or less get its own repository, with a few exceptions where we'll combine a few components into a single repository when their life cycles are highly related to each other. And this is a move we've been planning for some time. We have a very generous customer sponsor supporting us in this move. We're very grateful for that. And they are sponsoring this work. So what we're doing here is relocating all the components, and adding terror tests to them, implementing proper semantic version on our components. And we're doing this so we can speed up or accelerate the rate at which we accept components that are donated to us, accept pull requests to improve our components. Previous to this, our components, unlike our modules, don't have all the automated tests. And that's because components are sometimes harder to test, especially if they have cross-account dependencies or other underlying dependencies. But as part of this work, we've also built our own helper for TerraTest so that you can write infrastructure unit tests that leverage Atmos under the hood. And that's a really powerful thing to be able to do. You can now, in an automated fashion, test one of your stacks defined in Atmos, bringing it up and tearing it down. And we'll be showcasing that as part of this move to refactor all of our components into this new organization. Now, remarkably, we don't expect this to take very long. We expect to have the first pass of all components completed within the week. The tests will be a fast follow that we're implementing. So the first pass here is we're implementing the test auto, sorry, we're migrating the components themselves. We're replicating the latest release in each component. So those releases will be available verbatim in the new component repositories. And then we're, as a second pass, implementing the TerraTest automation. So if you have any questions or concerns about this, we want to hear. Please feel free to post those as comments here, and we will address those. Additionally, just to reemphasize, this has no effect on our child modules. Nothing at all is moving. They are staying exactly where they are. We are not touching those. There's this one special repository, which is a mono repo of Terraform root modules that we call components, and that is what is moving. All right. Any questions on this? Oh, one other good news about this. So, what is the impact to you if you are using components in the old location? If you are using our component updater, the Cloud Posse component updater, I think we linked to it somewhere else, but the correct one here. So we are updating the component updater. So it will automatically rewrite your sources and open a pull request for the new locations. So if you have the component updater set up, there should be basically no impact at all to you. Either way, if you run into any issues, please let us know. That is not the intent. This is not supposed to be a breaking change for anyone. All right. Oh, one, I guess, other thing. So what is the future history of this, plans for this repository, the Terraform AWS Components repository? Well, we are going to keep it alive, but not accept any pull requests. We're going to automatically close any pull requests from contributors. Instead, we will direct contributors to open their pull request against the new component repository. We are keeping this current repository around for backward compatibility and maintenance obligations that Cloud Posse has, but we will not really continue to invest in this repo. At some point, we will archive this repository. All right. Now, any questions on that? Okay. Well, next
Before
topic. What's
you
that?
move to a new topic, I sent you back a link that is that you can use for the first topic that you couldn't open up the link
Oh,
for.
cool. Thanks. Yeah. So, I consider my command line foo pretty
That
sophisticated. I've,
you're not sharing that screen
oh,
though.
I, that when I clicked on the link, it opened up in another Arc window. Go figure. All right. So you see that now. Thanks, Matt. Yeah, so I consider my command line foo pretty sophisticated. As many, older people here, I've grown up on the terminal since, I was in not even in high school. Mac has a BSD, background and history, and it is nice to see some of these commands that I was unaware of to improve the scripting and automation on a Mac, basically. So I've always known that there was a keychain access on the Mac, and we've used the keychain in other implementations, for example, to store SSH keys before that was a thing in 1Password and similar tooling. But I thought this was pretty nice that you can retrieve on the command line the password for any password for any the password for any website URL that you have stored in the keychain. Obviously, this prompts you for your password and authentication. Open, I use this one all the time. It will use the configured application for a file based on its extension and open that up. That's convenient. pbcopy, I think anyone on a Mac doing some scripting will have, or doing a lot of work on the command line, is familiar with. I use this one also all the time to copy text and then pipe it into ChatGPT.
That's also a good one to use in conjunction with the one that reads your password out, because otherwise it gets
Yeah,
echoed
exactly.
to standard out.
Exactly. You can combine this one with pbcopy and bam, it just sends that password into your copy buffer. Dates, that no rocket science there. This one was new to me. I'd never heard of this one, this command, network quality, to understand the basically run an internet speed test. So that's cool. Got to try that out. Over the years, I've used apps on the Mac to have the effect of Caffeinate. I didn't realize that they had actually acquired that project or implemented it natively within macOS. So you can actually just now run Caffeinate directly on the Mac. So that's cool. UUID gen, definitely used that a lot over the years for different reasons. It is annoying that it's always in uppercase, and that's why he's doing this to lowercase it. And some honorable mentions here. Screen capture is cool too. I've used that. Say I use all the time. Say is awesome. If you're running a long-running process on your Mac on the terminal, like some, we run a lot of repository migrations at Cloud Posse that can take hours. So at the end of that, I always have it say something. So, migration completed, and then it, freaks me out for a second, and I realize that the migration is completed. Any other cool finds that you guys use regularly? That, cover that. So, what is, gosh, a month or two ago when all the stuff came out with the Snowflake breach, if you will. It wasn't really a breach of Snowflake so much as it was a breach of poor credentials that were found on the dark web. But the hacker behind all that has been arrested, supposedly innocent until proven guilty, right? That in and they were arrested in Canada. Don't have more info than that. Not much has been disclosed about it. This is an interesting one. So actually, earlier this year, we rolled out Gitpod on Kubernetes as a POC. It was pretty easy to get up and running. And that is the problem with a lot of things on Kubernetes. With a Helm chart, that's the beauty of Kubernetes. It's so easy to get anything up and running. And the devil is in the details when you actually start operating it. So they have a long write-up, and it's kind of funny, how the story of how not to build a development environment in the cloud. And this details their experience trying to have containerized development environments running on Kubernetes and all the little things that they ran into. It sounds not because of our project, we didn't get that far along on it, but it sounds reminiscent of our other challenges that we've had, even with things that were natively built for the cloud, like Actions Runner Controller. Thing is, there are a lot of
Sounds
moving
like
parts.
if they were working with a better DevOps accelerator, they would have had a better
Yeah,
experience there, if you ask me.
I wish I could, take claim or take, I wish I could jump on the bandwagon with that one. But, the things that they bring up are just very, what's the word? They're just very
Perfect
relatable.
invalid, and we've just found out how to work around them appropriately.
No, but they're like, with it, they talk about a lot of these things, like with a developer's workload in a container, it's not predictable. It's very spiky, and depending on what they're doing, that will be volatile. And so you can reserve all of that CPU on the node, but then you're also running a very inefficient cluster.
Compute optimization is a huge part of being able to scale out your workload
Yeah.
correctly, though. So if you don't have your arms around that, you're A, spending too much money, and B, you're doing it wrong.
But it's also, How does Kubernetes solve a lot of these things? Well, you can reschedule pods. That's not a very pleasant experience if that's your IDE that you were developing in, right? That works very well for stateless pods and containers. That works very well when that exact request could just be rescheduled immediately to another pod. Your data is persistent, whatever, but it's very different for a graphical UI. That's not a seamless transition to just, reconnect when you're on another machine with
Fair,
greater resources.
fair. This is why I live in the back end, but I guess there are front end concerns that people have to think about. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
And I have famously said, I don't know what app wouldn't run well in Kubernetes. Well, I get it now. This is an example of a perfect case where it makes sense that they would have struggled with that. Now, if you have a client written for this that is more optimized to the situation, not just a standard RDP client, but one that can anticipate that a pod is moving over to a new node, and that is that whole or operation is orchestrated in concert together with the client. Maybe the effects could be minimized, but it's still not going to feel native. Like, I don't have a little hang up like that. It's just like imagine the beach balls, but forced upon you all the time because of various slowdowns. And they talk about in VS Code, some of the problems of this is that, if an operation with the Lang server doesn't complete in a certain amount of time, it just kills VS Code or that kills the Lang server or other things, and that's an annoying developer experience.
I'm going to have to go read this whole thing now. Awesome.
It's a pretty thorough write-up for sure.
Sweet.
Yeah. So that's that. So what I didn't get as far as, so okay, great. What are you moving to? And I don't know what they're moving to.
Well,
Anyone know more
something
about
about IPFS in there. And then it
that?
said Bitcoin, so they're going a different way.
Well, I think this is all the things they have tried over the years.
Yeah, I do gotta go read it. Okay.
I don't know if I've come to like what they're moving to. Yeah, we're still talking about network complexities and security and isolation and native root access and namespaces. And oh yeah, this is thorough. So this is not one of these where I could easily say, oh, but did you try this? No, they tried that. So, all right. Next topic was burrito. I thought this was a pretty clever name for a taco. Tacos is a term Scalar coined, Terraform automation and collaboration software. Cloud Posse is often attributed to the coining that term, but it was actually Sebastian, I believe, at Scalar. And they have a there's a new project here called Burrito. And what's interesting, there are a lot of these, by the way. It's another controller for Kubernetes to run your Terraform. And it sounds great on the surface. I think the devil's in the details, especially if you want to review the plans of what happens. I'm cautiously optimistic that this is addressing part of that based on the UI, but not sure. I would like the ability to review that plan and improve it before the controller automatically applies it for me. But that's a little bit anti-Kubernetes as a paradigm. So I would understand that one would probably want to be able to turn that on or off depending on the resource itself. I wouldn't want my database to be automatically destroyed just because there was a typo in my resource. But if it's a certificate that can be recreated and not impact anything really, no harm, no foul. Anyone who's used Argo CD will also kind of recognize this UI too. It's kind of similar in how it's represented. So that's why they're billing themselves as the Argo CD for Terraform. And yeah,
I
this is a.
also thought it was interesting how they kind of built out like their building blocks and called them layers. I know there's been a lot of talk in the industry just recently about terminology, about what we're calling all these things. So, yet another term.
Yeah, these are not your stacks, these are your layers now. This little animation with
I also just posted in the group chat about the previous topic. I had ChatGPT summarize that article for me, and it says that Gitpod is basically building their own custom platform for CD for cloud development environments. Basically, they're not using something that exists kind of today.
Yeah, that's interesting.
That
And
makes
so,
me wonder
are you
who
having
owns them,
studies?
because
They're going to be
that's not a.
orchestrating VMs directly, maybe, or
Yeah, it didn't give me that much info.
somebody else is talking?
Well, sorry, I interrupted. I said it makes me wonder who owns them, because that's not a small undertaking. We're just going to rewrite our own cloud orchestration platform. It's no big deal.
And
That's a big ask.
if they say they go to Nomad or something, then you know that.
I was expecting to see it be a Nomad announcement or something. I didn't see any mention of Nomad.
Where's the other shoe dropping that says Nomad?
Oh, what was that, Zach?
Where's the other shoe dropping that says Nomad
Yeah,
on it? I guess.
exactly. And I mean, Gitpod has been around for a long time. They were one of the original CDEs. Just looking at the repository, trying to see though. I don't know how old the project is entirely.
It actually seems like this is a commercial product, right? That they're Gitpod Flex. So if you look at the link I just posted in meeting chat, it's actually like they're introducing it as a product.
Let's see here. What is the October? Okay, so last month.
It says it has like development container support and VS Code plugins and a bunch of other things.
Interesting. Yeah. All right, makes sense. Next announcement is will be music to some people's ears. Didn't really ring in mine, but this has been probably one of the most hotly requested features in Terraform since the advent of for loops to begin with. So, you know, there was a time when for each didn't even exist in Terraform for those of you who haven't used Terraform that long. But the second it was released, everyone was, yeah! And then, oh. Because it didn't work the way a lot of people want to use it, like to for each over all the regions and deploy their VPC. Not to mention that you shouldn't do that. So that's been another hot topic we've talked about a lot on office hours. It's come up like why you probably, even though you want to do for each on providers, seldom do you actually want to, maybe. But hey, you know, to each their own. And Matt has brought up a good point about this in the past, which is it's not up to, for the language to tell us what we should or cannot do. That, you know, that is an architecture choice. The language should let us do anything. So this is a move in that direction. So that's why I kind of have changed the beat of my drum on that a little bit. Keep in mind, if you are using for each and you want to use it over providers, why are you having multiple providers? Is it because they're in different regions? And then wait, don't you want your Terraform state to be in that region? Well, this is not going to help you. If you want your Terraform state to be in the region and you want to use a for each on your providers, this is still not the right approach. Check out Atmos. All right.
Yeah, I also just want to point out, like, I feel like every time this comes up, I want to do community service and say the reason 99% of people are doing things in multiple regions is for high availability, slash disaster recovery or something along those lines. And the minute you have a single module that needs to operate on multiple regions at the same time, if one of those regions is down, that means you can no longer make any changes to that root module until the other region comes back online, because it's going to be you're going to have state, and you're not going to be able to talk to the other region's cloud endpoint to get the status of all of those things that should be deployed. So this is going to fail, and your Terraform then is not going to be highly available, if you will. So you will only be able to ever make a change when the other region comes back up. So don't do this if high availability is your goal.
Agreed. All right. Any questions on this before we move on? And this is an alpha release, just to highlight, so it's not yet ready for prime time.
So it's ready to use for production,
Exactly.
right?
Exactly not right. And last one is, UDP support on AWS has is overall pretty lacking in a lot of areas. So this was interesting to see UDP support now for NLBs and private links.
Yeah, specifically on the NLBs, and that's for IPv6,
That's
right?
true,
So
I
it
guess.
used to support it for IPv4.
Okay. Good clarification. Right, that's it for announcements on my part. Any other announcements? Let me check the chat. Looks like it. All right. Any other announcements?
I have a very weird niche-y one that I spoke to you about earlier. So if anyone happens to be using a Mac and you buy the new Apple Magic Keyboard and Apple Magic Mouse that have the USB-C chargers on them, beware that they only work if you are running Mac OS 15 or later. It doesn't work on 14.x trains of Mac OS.
How'd you find that was the problem you had this morning? How'd you figure it out?
a lot of Googling, and then I actually found one of my friends posted something on a forum about it, and I actually DM'd him and asked him, how did you fix this? And he's like, oh, Apple support told me that it only works for 15.1 and above, basically. So yeah, but nowhere else is that documented, which is pretty crappy if you buy it to like use on a work laptop or something that you can't control the update cycle, that this new hardware, which is just a keyboard and mouse, won't work properly on old OS, for not even old, one generation old
Yeah,
OS
barely.
versions, like by a couple weeks or whatever that 15.1's been out. So
I don't know if any of you were XCPNG users, but their 8.3 product finally went GA the end of last week, I think it was, which brings in a lot of cool, necessary virtualization things into the hypervisor, into the Xen hypervisor. So if you are a Xen or XCPNG user specifically, 8.3 is a big upgrade from 8.2. So that's something, and the upgrade process is not automatic either. So it's not something you're just going to wake up to. It takes a work to get into it, but it's a big difference.
All right, thanks for the public service announcement on there another? Yeah, there's the link in the chat. All right, any questions we can get answered today?
Hey, Eric.
Hey, Kunal. Hey, Kunal.
I just have one question. See, I'm like new to DevOps. Like, it's been around 2 years. I'm working for a corporate in the as a DevOps. So, I'm just a bit confused. Like, when I'm learning a new technology, I just wonder like how far I should get in a particular technology. Like in a learning way, like how much is the best thing to learn? Like, I don't know where to stop learning about a particular technology.
I think it, depending on who you ask, you get different answers. The reason why I do what I do, the reason why Cloud Posse exists is this is something I did, even if I didn't get paid for it, and sometimes working for an open source company, that's what it feels like. How far you go on a topic should be how interesting the topic is. If you're just optimizing for the next job, the next opportunity, I don't know if that's a great way of going. But if it is, and that's the goal, then I'd find out what that job actually wants, and then focus on learning those technologies to that extent. Overall, I think the most important thing is to have your own side projects and build around that. If you don't have yet a personal blog or website of some kind, okay, there's your first project. Build and host and deploy that, and that becomes your first home lab. Or if you're interested in home automation, that could be something else. Or if you're interested in, AI, build the workflows and the pipelines for that. But you need to have a purpose. Learning to learn is seldom as effective as learning for having an outcome. Plus, when you go into that job interview, it's so much better to show the outcome of something you learned and did and developed than just learning to learn. So without more context, my advice.
No, see, I wasn't like targeting it for a job. Like I was reading about basically a Git. I have choose a course on Udemy, and it was like so basic. And then I just started using ChatGPT for in-depth things. Like it told me like how to create a snapshot of things and use SHA and everything else. So, like, I find that some of the courses are basically useless on the Udemy.
I think we're entering into a new time or new era of learning where conventional methods of, a book or online courses are being challenged. Obviously, ChatGPT is pretty interesting, or similar AI systems. I think it comes down to how you like to learn. If you like being more hands-on, I think I go back to my original answer. Get that project. Like the first example I said, if you don't have your own personal blog, there, start there, because you're going to be forced to use Git. Well, you should be forced if you're, following any modern standards. And then you're pulling on that thread. The next thing you need to do is test that. So how do you implement tests? And then how do you implement the workflows for it, and so forth. So by doing something, taking something from an idea all the way through to production is how you get that experience. Then along the way, you have to pick some tool chains. That's a personal thing. I can't say you should learn Kubernetes, because I don't think Kubernetes is for every company, and I don't think it's for every developer, but it's still
No,
a pretty
I have
good path.
basically I have worked on all the tech stack in DevOps things like Kubernetes, Terraform, and Argo CD and everything. But I just like to learn everything in depth, like how the things work, what's the engineering behind the thing. That's my goal is.
I think the most valuable thing from my experience is less the book knowledge and more the practical experience. It is so hard to just study and learn it if you haven't encountered the underlying problems that led to a solution.
I
So
still
I
read a
still
lot
go
of
back
books.
to,
I still read a lot of books.
Well, 1 second. I'm gonna come back to that in 1 second. It wasn't you. Or was it you, Kunal? I don't know. There's someone on the call who joined not that long ago that had a really interesting assignment that they gave themselves. They found this really intricate architecture on AWS that was using AWS services, and they made it their project. I'm going to re-implement this whole thing, but I'm going to swap out every AWS service with some equivalent open source project and get that software to run. And he got it. He showed up like 2 weeks later and said, "Hey, remember I talked about that? Here it is." I thought that was a great example of that's how you get experience, is you find some challenge that's interesting to you and roll it out. And it's not about reading more on Argo CD. Stay up to date, but you don't have to go technical, I think.
Yeah, I'll sure try some projects like you say, using architecture of various AWS services and like replace it with the open source things.
I mean, that was just what one person's example was. Personally, like if I was trying to learn this, that's not a project I would have assigned to myself, because that wouldn't have been enough to compel me over the finish line to learn it. But that's where you know yourself best. Like, what kind of project would most captivate you to see it over the finish line?
Like, thank you so much for your answer.
Yeah, I hope it helps a little bit. And I'm sure a lot of others will have some suggestions here. George, I know you were speaking up there for a minute. What were you saying, George? Or
As
not?
I work to unmute myself, sorry. I
Oh.
was saying the practical experience is so like you need to have a practical application in order to understand, but I still read a lot of books to teach myself new things. So like the book, a lot of my stuff starts with me reading a book and then moving into some practical knowledge.
That's the same thing I have in my mind, because I already did some practical projects and such things. But when I try to read about those things, like how the engineering behind it and everything works, I get better knowledge about that particular technology. I basically suppose I face any problem or error in the while deploying things and such things. If I have already read about those things, I can troubleshoot it better. Like I know, like
That makes sense.
you getting me? Yeah.
Some you need some anchor knowledge, something, some foundation to build upon, and then you balance that with some practical exercises, and it's a feedback loop, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think your experiences will, to some degree, naturally direct you in the direction of the next thing you need to learn. Or
I don't
show where
know
you need to go.
if I really know anything about DevOps, because it's just like I don't know if it's already too much time or not. Like it's just 2 years, but I don't know. Like I'm already like certified in Terraform and some a few certification in Azure and one in AWS, but still I just want to learn everything in depth.
I would say the surface area is too great these days. It's a joke to expect, a full stack engineer in the current stack of technologies. You can be a jack of all trades but a master of none, like good enough to have, tie the pieces together, but really mastering it is a pretty massive endeavor. And I'll bring up an example. Like, on AWS, we publish a lot of Terraform modules at Cloud Posse. And part of that stems from my original imposter syndrome. Like, hey, I hadn't written that much Terraform, 10 years ago, and wanted to show that, I knew what I was doing. So I put some Terraform modules up, and here we are, and it's doing well. But we have 200 Terraform modules. If we wanted to repeat that for Google, for GCP, that would be another 400 modules. And I bring that on. only up because it's just too, it doesn't make sense. It's just too much to learn. We shouldn't master all
Yeah,
that.
exactly.
I could never
Yeah.
expect any one engineer on my team to understand 600 modules. And that's just the Terraform part. Like, that's not even understanding the underlying technology for that given cloud or tool or database or things like that. So
Yeah,
I feel
exactly.
like
That's where I've been confused, like what is the point where I need to stop? Like, what is enough? What is the definition basically would be, I say, would be enough knowledge I have gathered
yeah.
of, yeah.
You have a job today?
No, like
Oh.
it's already it's already 1 a.m. In morning.
Yeah.
I'm basically from India.
Yeah. Well, what my advice was going to be is the amount you should go is you should strive to be the best at what you do at your job and not set guardrails on that, right? You should try, seek to learn and become the best at what you do in anything that you do, but you don't need to do that. There's too much information in this world. There are too many technologies to try and become a master of everything. And it's just a fool's errand. That's why it needs to be based on some outcome, some pursuit, some personal satisfaction that no one else can tell you what that is.
I share some of the sentiment here that Kunal has. I'm fairly advanced in my career. I've been doing DevOps since 2013. But I've been working for 5 years for a consultancy, very much like Cloud Posse, right? So what that requires is some level of competence generally in DevOps concerns. So there is a role that one fills that the market calls DevOps engineer that carries some expectations. And so I think that there is some base level knowledge that one needs to have, right? It's good to have a certification from one of the cloud providers that says you know how to architect a solution. It's good that you have a Terraform certification. Maybe go learn a CI/CD, like cover the ground of the tool sets that a DevOps engineer might need to address. And so that's infrastructure as code, CI/CD, maybe testing frameworks, stuff like that. So you have one example that you at least have familiarity with in each of these, because the skills can move laterally. It's not about having mastery of everything. You can't master everything, but having
Exactly.
some understanding that you can then apply laterally to other tools is a huge help.
Yeah,
I think that's a great answer, Kevin. Matt, anything to add to this?
I think we've pretty well covered it. I mean, I think the answer to like how much like it's such an existential question, like how much knowledge is enough knowledge. And I think like for me personally, it's always been enough to get the job done, enough to there's three different things. One, enough to get the job done, like that's kind of the bare minimal. Two, one enough to be able to like advise others on how to get the job done, is a third one. And then the third one that I would usually be is enough until I'm not interested in learning more about the topic. Like, if it's something that I'm interested in, or some other thing finds my interest. I mean, given unlimited time, obviously like you'd want to know everything about everything, but we don't have that. So you have to put up some sort of some sort of like barrier to when to stop. And for me, it's generally like one of those three things. Like, okay, I know enough to accomplish the specific product or problem that I was trying to fix. And I don't really have any more interest in learning more deeply than that on that topic, so I'm done. Or I need to be able to constantly give advice to other people on how to fix this topic, so I need to go a little deeper so I understand all the challenges or guardrails or blocks or whatever that people might be putting up against that, or other things that other people might bring up, so I can answer it for them. And then the last one is just like, I want to learn more about this because I'm interested in how it works, or I really need to know how it works for some reason, or one of those types of things. And that's where I stop. So I don't think there's any like right answer. It's just whatever your personal preferences for that, for that particular topic.
I really like your answer. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I'll try to implement in my own way.
Feel free to come back and ask more questions. We'll help guide you along the way if you want.
Yeah, sure. And it's your birthday today, Eric?
Yesterday, yeah, November 5th was my birthday.
Yeah, so
Nice one.
belated happy birthday.
Thank you, thank you. I appreciate it. I'm 46 now. All right, any other questions? Other
Great
questions?
design.
There's a book recommendation there, The Practice of Cloud System Administration, Volume 2. That's from Mark Tamsky. Mark is a former Google SRE, I think it was. All right. Any other questions? This is really open-ended. Can be on anything. Our open source Terraform modules. And if not, no big deal. We'll end a little early today.
I had one, not really a question, but just a follow-up on a question that I asked a couple of weeks back. I was asking about provisioning or, getting credentials or setup or whatever the case is on on-premises servers that needed to access the cloud. And I got a lot of good suggestions from the team here. One of them was using a signed URL, and I think Matt came up with that idea. And that's the path that I was actually going down, doing a lot of experimentation. Looked like it would be a very, very viable solution. Turns out that the servers that I'm going to be working with already have an IAM role, and they have the AWS CLI installed. Because that was my biggest concern. Like, I didn't know if I would be able to modify the configuration of the servers. I didn't know what it would take to get them credentials. And I wanted to have like the lightest possible solution, to apply. And if you can curl and you know the URL, then you can upload a file if the URL is pre-signed and you got all the other sort of bits that go along with it. Anyway, they've got credentials, they've got the AWS CLI, so all of that stuff is pretty much unnecessary. I'll just be able to update the role that they're using, just add a new IAM policy to it to give them permission to write to the bucket, and we're going to be good to go. So thanks for everybody's suggestions, and just wanted to kind of follow up. You
Just
just
makes
wanted to see if we could come up with any good answers. No, not necessarily. I definitely appreciate, the suggestions. And I wanted something that was just easy. And yeah, I mean, CLI would be easy if they had permissions, but not knowing if they had permission or they even had the CLI. Yeah, I wanted something that was like totally straightforward and easy to do.
And yeah, it was an exercise in how many ways can you upload a file to S3? So I learned a lot from that conversation. That was cool. But that answered one question, but it created some more, like, how do they have that role? Does that mean they're exporting some static AWS credentials on that server? That sounds scary. Are they using?
Unfortunately, yeah, it looks like they are static. That would not be my preference. And it looks like they are refreshed on a very regular basis. Manual, not manually, but there's an automated process that
Yeah,
handles
they have
that.
something doing that. All right. Well, better than not at all. So,
It's not as good as having like the what STS or Simple Token Service, whatever that token service is that handles it. But it's good enough, and yeah, it's going to get the job done.
All right. Thanks for the update. All right, well, if nothing else, we might end a little bit early today. Thanks everyone for your time. Let me jump over here to the outro slides. So we'll be posting a recording of this session to our YouTube channel. You'll find that there. Feel free to share that with your team if anything was interesting. If you're curious about how Cloud Posse can help your organization adopt Terraform in a more streamlined and efficient way, especially as it relates to AWS, we're the company to call. Book a meeting by going to cloudposse.com/meet, answer a few quick questions, and you'll meet with me directly. Here are some next actions you can take. If you haven't yet subscribed to our newsletter, go to newsletter.cloudposse.com. We have a engaged Slack community. Go to slack.cloudposse.com. About 10,000 people have signed up. And you can also listen to our office hours as a podcast. We syndicate it through all the major mediums to listen to podcasts. So listen to it on the car or in the car or on the train. All right. Well, thanks everyone. Have a great rest of your week. I'll see you next week, same time, same place.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.